We will now call to order the City Council study session for June 27th, 2011. Oh, somebody missed it. On the agenda, it says the June 27th, 2010 regular council meeting agenda. I don't think we're going to look at that one. So the first item is to review the agenda for next Monday's council meeting. Okay, is everyone up? All right, items 3A through 4A. Items 4B through 4F. Items 4G through 4J. Items 4K through 5E. 5F through 6D. Item 7, through 10G. These are, I think by statute, cannot be included, or we just don't include them on the public hearings, of course, we can include in any, they have to be handled separately. Items 10A through 10G, we handle those separately, but as in the past, consolidate those, Ms. Spinner, that's okay?
Yes.
Okay. So we'll look and see which ones of those fit. Let me see. Are there any that in there, where do you see a natural breakoff where we can maybe split them? Are there some that don't fit that we shouldn't take as part of the group, or can we combine all of them?
Yeah, you go to 10N.
Yeah, you go all the way to 10N.
Okay. All right, so when we vote, we'll, even though they're separate and off the consent agenda, we'll take items 10A through 10N as with a single vote. Is that okay to everyone? Okay. All right, 10H through 10N then? Nothing? Then at that time, we will recess and we'll do the enter into the special meeting to approve give final approval to the budget.
Right.
Okay, and that you have a separate agenda for that, with two items on both the operating budget and the capital improvement program. Okay, then we'll come back and handle item 11A. And Councilmember Richens, I understand you're still working with the applicant on that, and we'll have more information on Monday, hopefully.
Yeah, the applicant actually has been busy working on it themselves and evaluating the sign and the context.
Okay.
Yeah, well, I'm pretty confident it's going to be on the agenda for Monday night.
Okay. All right. Is that it? Next item on the agenda is to hear a presentation, discuss, and provide direction on the environmental compliance fee. Mr. Boucher, what do you say?
Good morning, Mayor, Council. I can get him. I'm here today to talk to you about the environmental compliance fee. To begin with, just to give you an idea. Oh, what just happened? Oh, that one just went blank.
Go to slideshow. Down here, slideshow.
There we go. Let's see. Well, looks like we lost one slide here for some reason. This slide was going to tell you that the goal was to recognize the cost of unfunded mandates that are passed down from the federal and state level, and also recognize that we've had a reduction in state resources. It was there when I sat down, but it is no longer there now, so I don't really know what might happen. There it is now. Must have added one in. All right, we're off to a good start. These environmental mandates that we have, just to give you an idea on some of these, there's hazardous waste, which is regulated by the Resource Conservation and Recovery Act. What it does is it regulates how we manage hazardous waste that's generated from city facilities. We also have the National Emission Standards for Hazardous Air Pollutants, which regulates asbestos that comes from and is in city facilities. We've got CERCLA, which is the Comprehensive Environmental Compensation and Liabilities Act, which regulates Phase 1 and Phase 2 environmental site assessments that the city conducts. We've also have stormwater, which this is the largest portion of the environmental fee expenses that we have. Our stormwater regulations come from the Clean Water Act, and the city of Mesa has a specific stormwater permit that we will get into a little bit later on in the next slide. We also have air quality control measures that they come from the Clean Air Act is where those regulations come down. They're passed from EPA down through the state, and it's actually Maricopa County that regulates the city of Mesa for air quality measures. To give you an idea, here's one of our best management practices that we have in our stormwater permit is the operation and maintenance of basins, retention basins that are used for stormwater to minimize the discharge of pollutants from our system, from our stormwater system. As you can see from these photos, currently those basins really have a decreased turf density. And what this means is that they're not operating that the way that they're designed to. The turf that is there is used not only, it prevents sediment runoff. As you can see, sediment is a pollutant under the Clean Water Act. And if you don't have the turf density, you can actually have pollutants that are leaving our retention basins because you're having erosion that's happening in those retention basins.
So much the same thing that happens after a forest fire when there's no ground cover to keep the dirt in mine and just runs off when it rains or whatever.
Exactly, okay. Exactly. And then also they're just not working the way that they're designed. They're designed to have that grass in there. So in addition to that, we do tree care. There's trees that are in our retention basins, and we've had a reduction in tree care over the years. That's resulted in overgrowth, inability to remove the dead branches. So, again, you don't have healthy tree growth that's happening in those retention basins, which, again, doesn't allow them to operate as they were originally designed. In addition to that, we have BMPs for the maintenance of our storm sewer system. It's the maintenance and cleaning, again, to minimize.
So you have what?
Maintenance and cleaning, operation and maintenance.
No, you got an acronym in there.
Oh, the BMPs, I'm sorry. The best management practices that we have.
Thank you very much. You can deposit your quarter on the way out.
For the maintenance and cleaning of our storm sewer system, we spend approximately $1 million a year on this. Many times, as you'll see from one of these pictures, this is in our retention basins also that we're cleaning out. They're considered part of our storm sewer system. So it goes from the curb and gutter of the street all the way down into our retention basins. Another best management practice that we have is...
You can use it now. Once you explain the acronym, you can use it.
Okay. Is street sweeping.
You didn't know the rules were this complicated, did you?
I did not.
Okay.
So the maintenance and cleaning of our municipal streets, and this is approximately $2.2 million a year that we spend on street sweeping. And again, it's a requirement of our stormwater permit. Another part about the street sweeping, it's also one of our control measures that we have for air quality also. It helps in the reduction of air pollution.
And just so people may not understand how it helps with air pollution, could you maybe explain that a little bit? I mean, something that I didn't realize was such a huge contributor to our especially our PM10, our fine dust.
Right. With PM10, one of the large contributors when you look at the contributions of dust regionally are paved roads, which doesn't really make sense because a paved road should not have dust emissions coming from it. How it happens is you have track out, you have dirt that's brought out onto the roads, and as cars drive over that, you're grinding up that dirt and turning it into those fine particulate matter that are then being released into the air, and so you've got emissions that are coming off of those roads. The way that street sweeping helps is that you're sweeping up that track out on the road. Cars aren't driving over it, so you're not having the emissions from the road.
Yeah, I think it is, just in a MAG meeting, it's the number two and really the most significant, because I don't know that I believe the other one, which is unpaved roads.
Right.
But I believe it was up in like 15% of our PM10, our dust is caused by that comes from paved roads.
Correct.
So it's a huge issue.
Right. And one of the other ways that we try and do our best through inspection process to prevent it from getting on to the road. That's one of the things that we've tried to push in the air quality meetings at MAG is that if you can prevent it from being on the road, it can be more effective than cleaning it up once it's there.
Well, and it's just not track outs either. I mean, when somebody's sprinkler head breaks in their yard, you've seen that where it pushes dirt down into the street. When they washed their car, and they just went through a mud bog and they washed their car. That goes down in the street. There's all sorts of ways that dirt and dust get into the streets that the street sweeping takes care of.
Correct.
Okay.
We also want to discuss, we've discussed it here previously, some of the reductions that we've seen from the state budget. The Highway User Restricted Fund has been reduced by $3.7 million, and these were funds that were used previously for the storm drain and the street sweeping activities that we were discussing earlier. Also, the Arizona Department of Water Resources has a pass-through of over $600,000 that funds the basic operations of that department.
You're being far too kind. Pass-through is a nice term. They may have used it. It's a bill. We get sent a bill from the state to pay for ADWR, and that's a bill directly against our taxpayers. It was a fee or tax increase that the state didn't want to say they had a fee or tax increase, so they charged the city municipal water companies to run the ADWR, which means we have to include it on our bills. So that's the reality of it. It's a fee increase that was mandated by the state.
Yes.
Yeah, Councilmember Higgins.
And that doesn't go to individual water, like wells or people out in the county. It's only municipal water users. Do you know? I'm sorry. That's
the $612,000 is actually based on our population.
Okay.
So it's based on Mesa's population is what portion of the bill we're receiving from the state.
And so for the rest of the state, the municipalities are charged. So counties, people who live out in the county aren't covered, or do you know?
That part of it I'm not aware of. I'm only aware of Mesa's share of it.
I can't remember.
Yeah.
Here comes Mr. Butler.
Related to the water permit that we have to get right now.
Mr. Butler,
I know that's a slight digression, but.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. Mayor, Councilmember Higgins. No, county residents are not charged this assessment. It is a fee that is going to municipalities across the state and are being distributed like we are probably by the resident through the bill. The one point of concern for many cities is they don't actually even run their water company. It's a private water company, yet the city is still getting the assessment. So there was not a lot of rhyme or reason to the way that the legislature distributed this funding.
And just so we know, we are there will be a separate line item on our utility bills, which will identify this as a state charge. Okay. Thank you.
Here are the estimated cost for the environmental mandates in fiscal year 11-12. As you can see, the stormwater requirements really are the largest by far portion of the expenses that we have. And then there's kind of an even breakdown between air quality and hazardous materials and asbestos and other, which includes phase ones, phase twos, the environmental site assessments that I discussed earlier, compliance with underground storage tanks, and some of the other smaller programs that we have within environmental. So this totals up to $10.4 million a year in expenses. If you look at the current funding from the environmental compliance fee, it generates about $5.8 million a year. So the difference between the cost of the mandates and the current funding level is about $4.6 million that's not funded with the environmental compliance fee. Local streets funds fund about $3.2 million. That would be the street sweeping and the storm drain maintenance that we had discussed. And the remaining funds needed to comply with the environmental mandates would be $1.4 million that are currently unfunded. Just to give you an idea with the stormwater rules, we had looked at assessment, how we assess the fee currently. The stormwater rules are based on population, and because we are a larger municipality, we have an individual stormwater permit, and that individual stormwater permit has those best management practices that we have to report back to the state on. The benefits from the stormwater program are across the city. Everybody benefits from those environmental activities that we're conducting. So, with the current distribution that we have with the environmental fee is that it's a single flat rate that's added to each customer's utility bill. We looked at alternative scenarios to ascertain if it was possible to differentiate between customers in a manner that was consistent with the benefits that they receive from the environmental expenses. The distribution options that we looked at were residential versus non-residential, water meter size, and water consumption. It since the benefits are across the city and you can't really measure the benefits that everybody is receiving from the fee, and that the impact varies and is difficult to measure. It can vary depending on time of year even or the facilities and how they're designed. We really feel that the flat fee is the best way to still approach this. So with that, I will take any questions that you have.
Okay, questions? Thank you. Very good presentation. I think what it sums up is that, you know, we're trying to give our residents a view of what we call our new reality, and part of our new reality is that we are going to be passed down the responsibility or saddled with the responsibility of state and federal mandates. And in the past, when there was a lot of revenue floating around, you know, we did this and complained about it, but everyone stepped up and just cut the check because we had the money to do it. Now we don't have the money to do it, and to make matters worse, we're getting passed down even more mandates, and we're being taken, and many of the revenue sources that we had that at least the federal or the state government shared in have been withdrawn, leaving us holding the bag for everything. And these are items that still have to be paid for. Just because the legislature and the Congress cut things up above and reduce their spending, they still leave the activity in place, and we still have to pay for it, which means our residents have to pay for it. And that's not our decision, but it's been placed upon us as our responsibility. So when I hear people complain about about fees and things that are going up, I just hopefully they understand what's going on with among the three levels of government. And this is one thing we were back in Washington talking to Congress about, talking to the president about, is, you know, it's real nice to have all these philosophical and ideological and political debates and how wonderful people are with their changing the budgets and reducing budgets, but what they're doing in many cases is simply passing things down or leaving the cities to pick up the tab for things that they are dictating, they are mandating. So as long as people understand, not saying they will, but at least they've had an explanation. So, Councilmember Richens.
Can we get a kind of a better sense on what we need to cover that whole pot of money? You know, what's our BMP here? What's our best management practice to
We're talking about the $4.6 million gap.
Yeah, I mean, we have a pretty significant gap here. It's not like there's a magic pot of money in the back room that we can just pull out. I mean, I think you articulated it well, Mayor, saying, hey, you know, I'd like to put, hey, call your legislature on this fee because that's where it's coming from.
With the environmental compliance fee, every 50 cents generates approximately $1 million a year. To cover that gap that we showed earlier is $2.38 is what it would take. So with the current fee at $3, it would take it up to $5.38.
Current fee is $3 or $2?
$3.
$3. I don't know. To me, it seems this isn't a choice that we really we're getting forced to choose to do this, and it's not, I mean, the most comfortable position to be in, but, you know, we can't raise taxes. The state won't raise taxes. They want to let somebody else be accountable for the cost that they push down to us. So if we have to put $2.38 on the utility bill, then, you know, to me, I guess that would be the most transparent approach so people can understand the direct correlations that are involved.
Councilman Kavanaugh.
Just wanted to say I agree with Councilmember Richens' recommendations in this regard.
Okay.
If that's the direction, we'll put that on for Monday's agenda.
Yeah, listen, we don't have three council members here, so I'm a little reluctant to go full bore with it, and maybe we can, we've got do nothing, which leaves us with a $4.6 million gap, $2.37, which fully funds that $4.6 million. And I'd have no idea what the other three council members feel as far as whether they want to go the full measure, whether they want to cut back a little bit. So let's put it on for some additional discussion for Monday.
Okay.
And if you could maybe brief the other three council members between now and then and see what their feelings are. And if there's a feeling that maybe we shouldn't go that far, maybe we should ease into it, maybe we should go the full, but I'd like to hear what that would be.
Oh. Yeah.
Councilmember Higgins.
Where would that money come from if we didn't put it on this?
It's general fund.
General
fund. We don't do the full measure. Where does it come from? That's the thing. It's like, okay.
It's in the streets and the general fund.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, what's the trade-off, though?
Eventually it comes out of the general fund.
Right.
What if we don't generate it here, then what don't we do?
We don't pave streets. We don't fill potholes.
We don't pave street and fill potholes. Okay.
And we don't take care of parks.
Right. We don't
we won't repair turf, and we don't fix trees, which
yeah, we've been doing that for about almost a decade now.
Yeah, and we're paying the price for it.
We can do that anymore.
The problems just continue to add up as it relates to parks and our ability to.
It's not totally. We're not doing it. We're not doing it to the tune of $4.6 million.
Correct.
Right. So those.
You know, in some cases, we're not doing it.
But I mean, those odd streets.
I haven't seen us out trimming too many trees lately, and we may do it when it becomes a health or a safety hazard. Yeah. But I don't know that
after a storm or something.
Mark Hirschberg is shaking his head. I don't think we have a consistent tree maintenance program in our parks, and the trees not only look pretty ratty, but they don't function as they should. They look sickly, and when they don't function as they should, they don't provide shade. When they don't provide shade, it provides further damage to the turf. You know, you don't get it's just a compounding effect when you don't maintain these areas. And what you end up with is an environmental issue because of stormwater. And once again, it's just like the forest fires. When you have that, you have barren parks that are nobody wants to go to. That's the quality of life issue. But as far as this is concerned, now when you do have a gully washer rainstorm, you're going to have that sediment rushed into the storm drains, and now we have a compliance issue because now we're not complying with our stormwater. So it's a vicious cycle. Councilmember Cavanaugh.
Well, we've deferred maintenance so much on the parks and the retention basins. We're almost at the point where, you know, we have to hire somebody to spray it green than dealing with it because it just has a multiplier negative effect by deferring the maintenance as you indicated. So I'm hopeful that we can move ahead to close the gap with the fee because, again, the bills have to be paid. We have to meet our requirements under the permit, and it's one way or the other. We can continue to go with a reduced program of paving streets and continue to go with deferring maintenance on the parks and retention basins, which has an adverse effect. So I hope we can move ahead.
Well, this is one of those situations where we pay now or we're going to pay a much bigger bill later. And unfortunately, I think in many cases, later has already arrived.
Later's here.
It's here. So, Councilmember Richard.
Yeah, it's the same thing with the streets and the potholes. I'm pretty confident my constituents don't like potholes. You know,
I've heard that.
Yeah, if we shift that money out of transportation to cover the unfunded mandates that are being handed to us by the federal and state governments, you know, then we're going to pay the price on that down the road as well. That bill will go way up really fast if we're not careful with that. So that's why I'm recommending full coverage of the fee. You know, make sure that we clearly note that on bills so people understand. You know, this isn't local government trying to, pass off more of our expenses. This is stuff the state and the federal governments are saying, look, guys, you got to do it. And it has to be paid for somehow, and you know it's not our fault. it's just a regulation that's being handed to us that we have to come up with the money to pay for. So, you know, and maybe we evaluate this every year to see what the sum total of our unfunded mandates are, and we adjust that each year. So maybe some regulation goes away, and we can lower that. But we do need to cover it. So,
okay. So why don't you? Go update the other three council members before Monday so that they're up to speed. Tell them what the general sense was, and then we'll talk about how far we want to go, if we want to go the whole route.
Do you want to put it on the study session or on the regular, on the council?
Let's put it on the study session.
Okay.
Just so we can have a quick discussion of it.
Okay.
Okay. All righty. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Your reports on meetings and conferences attended.
Councilmember Richens.
I wanted to compliment publicly our police department for a couple of community meetings they held on Tuesday night. Councilmember Higgins and I had the opportunity to attend.
There's a lot of misinformation that had started to get into the rumor mill on a particular incident, and the police department was marvelous in patiently answering as many questions as the public had about this particular incident and getting the information out to the public. And so I just wanted to thank the PD for the great job that they did there in that particular meeting. Also, we had a crime prevention meeting that same night with Patty Gallagher and the group, and it was sparsely attended on a hot summer night, but it's always, anytime you can get some good crime prevention information out there, it's a positive thing. Thanks.
Councilmember Kavanaugh.
Thank you, Mayor. Late last week, I attended a monthly meeting of the Valley Metro Rail Board, and the board is moving ahead with continuing to work with the City of Mesa on the light rail expansion. Things are moving well there, that the board and the staff of Valley Metro Rail is doing a lot in terms of cost savings for the operation of its agency, and it's continuing to explore with the Regional Public Transportation Authority the idea of combining the chief executive officer for both of those organizations. And so those discussions will be continuing over the next several months, and I'll report back to you. Thank you.
And I missed a meeting. We have a report on the public meeting that was held, I think, about 2 weeks ago at EVIT. I think it was very well attended, and I got some good feedback from it. So looks like people are really getting into the actual.
Oh, right. On the light rail, the 30%.
On the light rail,
yeah. We had a very good turnout, very good discussion.
Okay. Councilmember Higgins.
Tuesday, Vice Mayor Summers and I attended at the groundbreaking for the new ASU Polytechnic residential facility and dining hall, and there were a good 100 or so people there. It was very fun. So the City of Mesa and the residents' commitment to putting in water, wastewater, and the street projects is paving the way. Oh, how's that for a cute one? So for the expansion of the ASU Polytechnic campus, it was a lot of fun.
Thank you. I had the opportunity of attending the U.S. Conference of Mayors annual meeting in Baltimore, and the good news is that every other city in the country, the economy stinks as bad as ours does. We all commiserated together. It is interesting when you get a bunch of cities together. It doesn't matter what part of the country you're from. It's interesting how much we have in common. They're having the same discussions we are about unfunded mandates and about what do we do about public safety. I mean, everyone is struggling. Everyone is scrambling. The good thing is it seems like now that we're into, I guess, the third year of this deep, deep trough we've been in, people seem to think that we're at least stabilizing. Nobody's in a free fall that I could tell. So it's been a really it was a really good meeting. It was good to get together with a bunch of mayors and talk about common problems and hear some solutions and have some cabinet officials that we could whine at and realize that it's not going to do any good anyway. But at least we got to whine at them. So thank you. Councilman Kavanaugh.
And Mayor, I heard a rumor that Mesa's in line for a leadership position. What happened in that regard?
Thank you for embarrassing me like that.
We like to.
No, as part of that meeting.
Wait, embarrassing you? You did a press release on this.
I didn't do one. Well, see, that's an inanimate object, you know.
Let's kill the false humility here. Come on, let's brag about this one. This is good.
No, I was honored to have been elected second vice president of the U.S. Conference of Mayors, and really excited about the opportunity to serve with our president in the coming year, Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa, who likes me because he says I'm the only one that actually pronounces his name. Right. Everyone else butchers it, and I go, Villaraigosa. So, as president and mayor, Michael Nutter of Philadelphia, as the vice president, really excited about basically taking the cities and our cities as a whole and Mesa's and Arizona's message to Washington. We just had a discussion on some of the things that happen in Washington that impact us directly. And I think what this financial crisis has really brought home to us is that there are decisions made, certainly down on Washington Street in Phoenix, but inside the Beltway on Capitol Hill and at the White House, that have a direct impact on us and our citizens. And it hits our pocketbooks. and it hits it in a way that's more direct and more real and now, more so than health care and Medicare and all the other things that are being debated, because it hits every citizen, and it hits every citizen immediately. And so, you know, our purpose, as both in the National League of Cities, of which our council is very active, and Councilmember Kavanaugh serves on the national board, and the U.S. Conference of Mayors, is to take the message that cities are important. And, you know, it's amazing that many times that's a message that that people in Washington just don't get. You know, one of the things important stats that we had. Almost 90% of the economic activity in this country happens in cities. 95% of the new jobs that will be created over the next 5 years will be created in cities. And yet, we are constantly the forgotten entity, even though we deal with our citizens every day in a direct way. And so we have a big task to really make sure that both at the state and federal level, these governments understand the role, the important role that cities play. I mean, this should be a partnership. And I think what we're seeing is that as the financial stress has worsened, it is all of a sudden not a partnership anymore. Since we're at the lowest level and the level that's closest to our citizens, we're the easy target. We're the dumping ground for all the mandates. They don't want to raise taxes here. Hey, let's just make the cities do it, and we'll let them figure it out. That is a common theme, both at the state level, which we see, but unfortunately in Congress, too, and at the White House. And so that's the message that we're really trying to bring out and to convey in Washington, and where people say, gee, why don't you deal with what's going on in Mesa? Well, I'll guarantee you, what happens in Washington really does affect and impact what happens here. And it certainly impacts our ability to create jobs and to build the economy and to deal with these things like these federal mandates. So I'm excited about the opportunity I'm going to have over the next 3 years to be involved in that. That, you know, in 2013, if the creek don't rise, and what's the thing saying? Whatever it is. You know, we'll be president of that organization, and hopefully give Arizona a real voice in matters that impact us. So thank you for bringing it up. Yes, sir.
I forgot one other thing. I got so caught up in your speech, you started to look like Ronald Reagan there for a minute. I forgot to...
He's dead now. Okay.
I forgot to congratulate the Parks and Rec Department on their 75th anniversary celebration they had at Pioneer Park last week. That was very well attended. What, 4,000, 3,000 or 4,000 people there? Lots. 2,500. Lots of people. And, you know, it's Pioneer Park is where diversity is real. It had everybody from every corner of the city that was there, old and young. And it was a really well-done thing. I think people had a lot of fun, and a few people even stayed around for a movie at the end of it. So congratulations to the Parks and Rec. I even ran into Joel Holmwood, one of the old parks directors that was hanging out there. It was really cool.
And I will say, I unfortunately was back east, but I can tell you that at 100, I don't know how hot it was, but you were immensely more comfortable in Pioneer Park at 105, whatever it was. I forgot how miserable humidity is. It was like in the high 80s in Baltimore, and it was miserable. So dry heat does play.
Yes, and Councilmember Richens reminded me of the new opening at the Arizona Museum for Youth, Peanuts at Bat. That opened up Thursday just before the Pioneer Park celebration. So if you have a chance, take your kids down to the Amy. And I had a lot of fun making a little glow-in-the-dark mask and going in the black light room waiting for the great pumpkin. So if you have you can go to my Facebook on the City of Mesa website and see fun little pictures from the Amy Peanuts at Bat. So it was a lot of fun.
Okay. Mr. Brady.
Thank you, Mayor. Mayor and Council, we have on Monday the 27th, prior to the council study session and council meeting, there will be a public safety committee meeting at 3:30, and the next study session and council meeting will be on Monday, June 27th, beginning at 4:45 p.m. Just a reminder, in July, we'll have two meetings in July. No, we won't have any study sessions. The council meetings will be on Thursday, July 7th and July 14th. And so we'll just meet in the evenings on those two nights.
So we'll meet like at 4:45.
Yeah, we'll probably do the, we'll probably have maybe some items before to review the agenda. But we're just going to come on Thursday. Will be no, in morning. July, no morning study session. And the only council meetings will be the 7th and the 14th.
Okay. All righty. Okay, I'll entertain a motion to enter an executive session. Have it from Councilmember Kavanaugh, second from Councilmember Richens. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
We'll now go into executive session, and we'll be back at 8:30 to start another meeting, Local Redevelopment Authority. Thank you very much.